Several weeks back, I was at a garden expo, participated in that, and we had a group of, I don't know, about 200 gardeners, I think, or thereabouts, sitting in the seats in front of us, and I was up on the stage, and I asked how many of you, and these are all gardeners, I asked how many of you are interested in mysteries, and almost everybody raised their hand, and I said, well, how many of you would be interested in a mystery that involves a gardener, because I've got a book that I had just finished reading, and I'll give you the information. And I got to tell you, 90% of the people in the audience grabbed for a pencil to write down the information. And the book I was talking about is titled Pushing Up Daisies. And the author is Rosemary Harris, who is a master gardener turned mystery writer. And it's the first in a series of books I think she's going to be doing. Well, we'll find out as we visit with her. One of the cool things about the book is that there's some garden information in there, along with the whodunit part. And it's a lot of fun to read. I enjoyed it a lot. And I thought you'd enjoy hearing from her. So we've asked her on, and she's with us by phone. Rosemary, you there?
Yes, I am. Nice to be here, Larry. And well, thanks so much. I'm delighted to hear about your informal survey.
Well, I could not believe when I said raise your hand if you're interested in mystery, and at least 80% of the people raised their hand. And then when I said there's a book written by a master gardener, almost everybody immediately reached for their pencil to get a pen.
If you could see the smile on my face now, that's wonderful news. The book is actually doing pretty well, and I've gotten a tremendous amount of support from the gardening community.
Well, it really is a lot of fun. And for our listeners who haven't had a chance to purchase it yet, it's tell us about the heroine in the book.
Well, Paula Holiday is a transplanted city girl who moves to the suburbs to start a gardening business. And in the course of restoring a landmark garden, she stumbles upon a mummified body. Not the kind of thing that I hope to find in my garden, but actually it is one of the few true things in the book. There was a mummified body found in an abandoned home in a Connecticut suburb not far from where I live. And because the body was found in the wintertime and I was suffering from a very bad case of cabin fever, I thought, well, what if the body was found in the garden? And that's how I wrote my story.
Oh, that's a great story. How did you now you've been involved in television, as I understand it. You've been involved in a variety of media-related occupations, if I'm not a video producer, a TV executive, and then somehow along the way you got into gardening.
Well, I've always been a gardener, actually. I think my earliest recollection of gardening was probably in the fourth grade when I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, not famous for its gardens, although we do have a wonderful botanic garden. I think we had to bring in seeds, either seeds or an avocado pit, and we grew them on the windowsill in my classroom. And everybody else in the class, as I recall, was pretty bored by the process. But I thought it was fascinating, and I've been growing stuff ever since, even if it was on a fire escape in a small apartment in Brooklyn. But happily, I now have a much larger garden in Connecticut where I ply my trade.
and you're right. This is the first in a series.
It is the first in a series, and it's called the Dirty Business Mystery Series. The second title I'm finishing up right now. And I'll probably be traveling to Wisconsin to promote the second book because it's called Corpse Flower. And the University of Wisconsin, as I understand it, has a number of successful corpse flowers.
I've smelled them. Where are you? And they're not a lot of fun to smell.
Not a lot of fun to smell. Not a lot of fun. But a lot of fun to write about. And, of course, there are so many things in the garden that lend themselves to mysteries. I think that's probably why there's so much overlap between gardeners and mystery fans. Much of what we do is a total mystery. And in the course of listening to you talking with Jessica before, I came up with the title for book four.
You're kidding me.
Creeping Charlie. How cool a mystery would that be?
Well, I tell you what, if you could just figure out a way to kill the Creeping Charlie, you could forget about writing, but you'd be a millionaire many, many a time over.
I think I will leave that to Jessica.
Well, I'll look forward to that one as well. But let's talk about this one. One of the things that I kind of enjoy about the book, and you know, if you're a gardener, it's kind of fun, is that. And here my memory is just blanking on me right now. But several times through the book, you talk about what you're growing, your heroine is growing. And you come up with some cool facts about in history of some of the various plants that you talk about.
Well, I wanted to. My heroine is a gardener, as I am, of course. And I wanted to have enough gardening information in there so that it would be interesting to gardeners, but not so much that it would be overwhelming for people who didn't know that much about gardening. So I tried to be not too specific about zones and different problems in the garden, but general enough so that anybody pretty much knows about rhododendrons, viburnums, azaleas, mountain laurels. And it was fun to throw in some little bits of information.
I liked some of the little historical pieces that you had about some of the plants and so forth. Enjoyed it very, very much. And
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed the book. By the way, let me give a number. If you'd like to call in, maybe you've got a question about how do you write a garden mystery or how do you write a mystery or maybe about gardening, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890, or email us at talk@wpr.org. And if you've read the book, that'd be another thing. Call in and chime in with your 2 cents worth on the book. It's really a fun read. Well, the victim in the book, by the way, is someone impaled on a garden tool, another victim, I should say.
Yes, one of the victims.
And one of Paula's helpers is blamed for that crime. And she's got an interesting cast of, you've developed an interesting cast of characters. I really like the owner of the local Greasy Spoon.
I knew you were going to say that, Larry. I really did, because every man who's read the book loves her. She's not the youngest woman in the book. She's not the most beautiful woman in the book. But all the guys love Babe. She's got attitude. And she's very confident. And she is, how can I put this? She's a woman of a certain age who is just very confident in her own appeal.
Yeah.
And I actually had somebody get in touch with me and say that he knew that Babe was based on a real character, and what was her phone number?
Oh, that's great. Well, you know, I tell you what, somebody like that, you'd love to have somebody like that at your own local coffee shop that you could go in and trade barbs with.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's part of her appeal is the fact that she's willing to sort of dish it right back to anybody and tease with people a little bit.
And she's got a pretty good sense of humor.
Right.
She also, she's a former rock and roller, so she knows her music, which I think is kind of fun to have a little bit of that in the story as well. And she's dating a younger man.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think, I don't know whether the men like that as much or the women like that, but everybody loves Babe. she definitely makes an appearance in book two, and it's one of the reasons that I'm so thrilled that the book is part of a series. I originally was going to set the second story at the Philadelphia Flower Show, which is just one of my favorite places to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I got about halfway through with the book and thought, I really want to go back to the small town that I've created. I want to go back to Babe. I want to go back to the locals. And mystery writers sometimes talk about the characters taking over. And I have poo-pooed this in the past. And they don't really take over, but you can miss them. And,
yeah.
And I'm so glad that I shelved that book and started on Corpse Flower because I think people would have missed Babe and Paula's friend Lucy and the cops and the rest of the locals in the fictitious town of Springfield.
And it must be kind of fun to work on a series where over time you have a chance to highlight one character or another or develop, you don't have to develop every character fully in every book, and you can sort of maybe highlight one character in one book and another character might play a more prominent role in the next book.
At the risk of overworking the analogy, it is a little bit like a garden, though, because you have a basic cast of characters in your garden, and at different times of the year, different things of the star. Seriously. You gave me that one. You really gave me that one. I hadn't thought of that before. But it is very much like that. And I'm enjoying living with these characters now. And I've had enough positive feedback from people to feel that other people are enjoying living with them as well.
Dave in White Bear Lake, Minnesota has a comment, I believe. Dave, hello.
Hello. Good day again. I called about the Creeping Charlie problem the last show.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to ask your guest if Creeping Charlie is going to be the one that did it.
Well, I'm not so sure. Creeping Charlie sounds like he might be the bad guy who's the victim. You know, I don't know that I would want to telegraph right out of the gate that Creeping Charlie is the bad guy.
Thanks, Dave.
Mary? We will credit you. We will credit Dave from Wisconsin if this book comes out.
Well, actually, he's from Minnesota.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're from Wisconsin. Uh-huh. Dave's from Minnesota, but he listens. Mary in Madison. Hi,
well,
Mary.
Well, like any bulb, she's going to be buried with positive feedback today because I will do my best to buy it today.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
I particularly love the plot device of the younger man. I don't recall the name of the movie that starred Diane Keaton and Jack Nicholson and Keanu Reeves.
Oh.
But she has to choose between them, and every woman I know cried foul when unbelievably she chose 100-year-old Jack Nicholson with his hot belly and his dentures and his Viagra.
Dream on that she would choose Jack Nicholson over Keanu Reeves.
All I could think was the geezers in charge of making movies had to have tipped that because no woman would have made that choice.
I'm with you.
It was the top to all of the money men. I'm sure that it was.
I'm totally with you on that one.
Thanks.
But that is not what I called to
say. Oh, okay.
It is so difficult to find a unique plot. And I have watched with great interest among my coworkers as they follow the quilting mystery series, which have been so popular. And I myself have been reading about the great gardeners of the English Victorian period, Joseph Paxton,
Paxton,
and John Tredescant, and their stories are so wonderful. And I called to ask, is the first book available now through the local bookstores?
The first book is available now.
Yeah.
It's available pretty much at any Barnes & Noble, Borders, or through Amazon, or through your favorite independent bookstore.
Yeah, your favorite, your local bookstore can, if they don't have it, they can order it and get it in a short order.
It is so difficult to come up with an original plot. And the real question I called to ask is, when you started dealing with agents and editors, everybody seems to be looking for the second Da Vinci Code, which they're not going to find. That was a wonderful fluke. But my true question was, first of all, what kind of reception did you initially get? And secondly, how much did they ask you to finish before they would seriously look at your manuscript? Did they like that idea, or did you have to talk them into it?
Well, with fiction, you generally have to deliver a complete manuscript. It's pretty much only nonfiction books that can be sold on a proposal or mm-hmm. a treatment. With fiction, unless you're a celebrity, you've got to write the whole thing. Otherwise, they don't know that you can write the book.
Yeah.
So if I were writing a book on, forgive me, potty training, it would be a heck of a lot easier to sell that on a proposal. But I did have to write the whole book, which nothing was going to stop me from writing this book, because once I got past 35 pages, which someone had told me that most first-time writers never get past 35 pages, and I thought, well, all I'm going to do is write 36 pages here. If I can write 36, then I can write the whole book. But once I got past that, it took me about a year to find an agent, and I don't think I really had to sell anybody on the idea, but what has to happen is you have to find the agent who loves your story and wants to spend the next year of his or her life with it. That's really the thing. It isn't a matter of talking somebody into something. Either they get it or they don't get it. Mm. And happily, my agent got it. She's a gardener.
Was this your first book?
Yes.
And you just started sending out the whole manuscript?
No, parts
of it, I meant. But it was done.
Pretty much new writers were advised to send out query letters. And I did that for a few months, and I thought it didn't feel right to me. So I sent out the first chapter with a letter, and the letter explained how many gardeners there were in this country and how much money people spent on gardening. And I said, I think people will be interested in my book. And I sent that letter to 10 agents, and 3 of them got back to me.
Oh. So you did a little selling, marketing on your own there to the agents.
Absolutely, because I think that new writers have to do that. There are so many books coming out and so many people with a manuscript in the drawer that I thought I would just do a little homework for the agent, and it worked for me.
Interesting.
I'm only going to say that right now they seem to be looking for paranormal manuscripts, and I think that trend is already passed. And
well,
the most dreadful kind of erotica, which is just really, what can one say? It's embarrassing to read it.
Well, you don't have to read it. But I think any time you try to follow a trend, by the time you do it, it's past. Mm-hmm. So you just have to write what you feel like writing. I couldn't write paranormal if somebody dangled a fat check over my head. Mm-hmm. I'm thrilled with writing gardening mysteries, and I've got a half a dozen stories and outlines already for the rest of the series.
Oh man, that's great.
So
I'm looking forward to every one.
Thank you very much.
Mary, by the way, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Well, you know, they always say write about what you know.
Mm-hmm.
But in your case, it's you're writing about, you know, there's gardening in there and you know about gardening. But how did you develop the mystery part of your skills?
Well, I've always been a mystery fan. Particularly the old British mysteries, what we think of as the traditional mysteries. I probably am not going to write any stories about thermonuclear warfare or global annihilation. But the traditional mystery story where there's a cast of characters, sometimes in a closed community, and a real puzzle to be solved really appealed to me. And it was a learning process. I probably rewrote the book 5 times.
Mm.
But again, to use the gardening analogy, it's like your garden. I mean, not everything works where you put it. Sometimes you have to move things. I feel like...
Is that frustrating?
Chauncey Gardner from being there, with all of the gardening analogies.
Is that frustrating, though, when you say, oh, I've got to write this whole thing over again, or...
It isn't frustrating for me. It's the most fun, actually. The hardest part is the first draft.
Okay.
But it's big fun to rewrite and to edit, especially now with, you know, computers and the software packages available. Back in the day when people didn't have this, it must have been torture.
Yeah.
But it's very easy to move whole chunks of a book from one place to another now. And, yeah, so, no, I love that. That's big fun.
Yvonne in Brown Deer has a question for you. Hi, Yvonne.
Good morning. I enjoyed your first hour, Larry.
Thank you.
I'm starting organic. I would like to ask the guest if she ever read Agatha Christie.
Oh, absolutely.
I find mystery books that have all sorts of information in them that you wouldn't get anywhere else because of the dire things that you have to deal with. But I learned from Agatha Christie that nicotine is an extremely dangerous poison.
Yes, it is, as is alcohol. I mean, there are plenty of dangerous poisons both in our home and in our gardens. Part of a presentation that I just gave at the Philadelphia Flower Show was a segment on poisons in the garden. And I covered poinsettias, mistletoe, things that you would not normally think of as poisons, angel's trumpet.
And there are infinite numbers of book possibilities or storyline possibilities from all those, aren't there?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, white oleander has already been taken, but there are plenty of other poisons in the garden that are potential for upcoming titles in the series.
Oh boy, I'll tell you. So when do you think you'll be coming to Wisconsin and Madison?
Probably next March. Although that's a pretty cold time to be coming there, isn't it?
Well, today, I don't know, in southern Wisconsin is probably about 50 degrees, maybe 45 or so. Normally it's a little warmer at this time of year, but we just went through 100 inches of snow.
100 inches?
For the winter, yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so there's been a lot. But usually at this time of the year, it's getting kind of nice, and you're going to have to come see me and bring a copy of your book, and we'll talk about your next book, too.
I would love that, Larry.
Thanks, Rosemary.
Take care.
Rosemary Harris is author of Pushing Up Daisies. It's published by Thomas Dunn Books, and I enjoyed it a lot. A mystery, and it involves gardening. And what could be better than that? Because I enjoy mysteries, and I enjoy the gardening, too. So it was a real treat for me to be able to read it, and there are more coming in the series. Rosemary Harris, our guest. Really pleased to have her along. Coming up on Monday, we'll talk about the complaints about bundled telecommunications services, and then our weather guys stop by, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.